I love to quote Benjamin Franklin because he said, wealth isn't the man that has it, but the man that lives it.
Unconventional Life, the show where I interview successful entrepreneurs, artists, creators, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. We will explore how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck. I'm your host, Joel Schroeder. Unconventional Life, welcome. This is your host, Joel Schroeder, tuning in today from Boulder, Colorado. Today's guest is joining us from Utah. We have got Garrett Gunderson in the house. Garrett, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
Let's do it.
Awesome. Really excited to have this gentleman on the show. Been working to connect for some time now, and just even in our pre-interview chat, there's a lot of good stuff that's in store for you all today. For those of you that don't know Garrett, he is an entrepreneur, financial advocate, and the founder of Wealth Factory. He's also a New York Times bestselling author of Killing Sacred Cows, and more recently, What Would the Rockefellers Do? And Garrett's appeared on many different TV shows, including ABC's Good Money, Your World with Neil Cavuto, Fox, CNBC's Squawk on the Street, and your firm was named to the Inc. 500. So definitely a lot of great stuff that you've pulled in. But beyond that, Garrett himself is also an artist, literally in the process of developing a one-man show, which hopefully we'll talk about a little bit more soon. He's also got a YouTube channel that he's releasing a lot of incredible videos on, and really just has a mission to make personal finance for entrepreneurs simple and immediately actionable, and actually even more enjoyable, which I think all of us need and can resonate with. So Garrett, welcome to the show. Fill in any gaps that I might have left out and give us a glimpse into your personal life.
So on the personal side, I'll say this, like last year I bought this cabin. And when I say cabin, let me give a little background. So we have this like A-frame cabin I bought 15 years ago. You know, it's got a loft up top and then just like one bathroom and just, you know, nice deck, but on a small amount of acreage with too many like things that could stick you and hurt you if you walk around. So we would go up there, and my wife and I are up there with my family, and you can hear if someone snores, the whole thing. So after like 3 days, it was looked like we went on some crazy drug binge. We're driving home. We look like we've never slept. And I'm like, it's no fun anymore. She's like, right. And so we said, what would be the ideal place? What would be this place that could be like a legacy that we could really create amazing memories? And we just described it on the drive home. So I call this realtor and I go, this is what we're looking for. They send me some garbage stuff after a while. And I'm like, no, got to be on a river. Massive trees, has to have a loft, has to be made out of logs, has to have plenty of room for people to sleep. So I just drove down this morning from our 5-bedroom, we call it the shady place, which I think is hilarious because it's got shade and we do shady things there. Like I'm a whiskey sommelier, so we do whiskey tastings, and I'm an amateur barista, so I make people cappuccinos, lattes, and pour overs. And we got fly fishing because the river's right there, and we've got a Can-Am so we can race people around. We got ping pong, foosball, pool, an outdoor fire pit. We watch movies outdoors on a 17-foot inflatable screen, and it's like this has been like just a renaissance year for me where I'm playing my guitar a little bit more again, and I started smoking tobacco just every now and again because I'm an author, and you got to have like a patchy, douchey jacket and smoke tobacco every now and again. Turns out my grandfather, who was my hero, smoked tobacco. Didn't even know it. I smoked tobacco with my dad, who grew up Mormon a few weeks ago. It's like I'm just like enjoying these quality, satiating experiences to love life along the way, so I never have to retire from life. I never have to retire from my career or anything I do because I'm doing the things that I really enjoy.
Yeah, so good. I love all of that. And I know family is important too. We were just talking before we got on air about you, bringing the whole family down to Guatemala. And I also know that you come from a 4th generation coal mining family, raised in rural Utah. And I imagine, and you're also, you know, your great-grandfather left Italy. But I imagine ancestry is important to you and plays a role in your work and, you know, potentially how you view wealth and finances as well. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I would be curious to hear your take on it. And
You nailed it, because my great grandfather lived in a little town in Italy called San Giovanni in Fiore. Now, in Fiore is important because I didn't know the last part of that. I went to visit this place a couple years ago. It turns out there's 9 San Giovannis in Italy, and I camped out at the wrong one, so we ended up doing a 4-hour drive, which was an adventure. Fine. And as a matter of fact, On the 26th of December, I'm taking my mom and dad and my two sisters to San Giovanni. Then we're going to go stay in Matera, which is the second or third oldest known civilization, which is evacuated in 1953. 14,000 people had to leave over 9 years because the president of Italy found out people were living in caves with animals and thought it was just repulsive. And then some developers got a hold of it in the 90s. And you can see Matera at the beginning of Wonder Woman, the one with Chris Pine in it, or you could see it. If you ever watch Passion of the Christ, it's where they actually show the crucifixion is on the hillside across from the caves and everything. And we stayed last year in all these caves. So I'm taking my family there for generational healing to say, hey, here's where we came from. And it was great that my great grandfather left, but he left a pregnant wife, didn't see his daughter till she was 7 years old because he couldn't make ends meet. And so that created a level of scarcity in my family of, hey, you could be separated if you don't hold on to everything you have. So they get stuck in the past sometimes. They get stuck in that fear, doubt, and worry. And I'm here to say, well, look, we can have that solved. Like we figured out that code. No, you know, my great grandfather didn't have wealth factor. He didn't have the knowledge I have around money. It's now about, I want to add to the next generations, a life of purpose, a life of love, a life of like enjoyment, a life of quality of life along the way, not just about sacrifice, not just about, you know, scrimping and saving and you know, working until you die. But instead, like, I'm so inspired by like changing that for my family and learning about my parents when they were kids and learning the most important lessons. I actually have 3x5 cards in front of me about, you know, their biggest lessons, what they, you know, the moments with their grandkids, the toughest times they had, what it was like when they dated each other, how they met each other. Like the questions I would have asked my grandfather if I were more mature before he died, to say like, this is what legacy is about, is these experiences and learning from each other. And also saying, hey, could we let go of this notion, you know, like every now and again, I tell my wife, I'm like, I love you so much. She goes, stop lying to me. So I told her that I said, hey, I know you're joking, but whatever that is there, let's be done with that. Because I just want to like love all over you, adore you. And I also want to open up beyond belief of like my deepest fears or whatever it is so that we could be so connected at a level that like nothing could stop us. And so like, yeah, I'm inspired by like the legacy that we could live and leave and redefining how we see it as an experience along the way, because some people just think about it as money that passes to the next generation, but money is just a magnifying glass and it's either going to, you know, be something that harms or helps them depending on who they are. So I only want to leave them opportunity and a set of values and a set of signposts that I call a family constitution and the meetings that we have along the way. And I'm taking my son to Asia for 30 days just to, at 14 years old, bond with him so deeply and do service projects so he could see what third world countries are like. And so that we can talk about things that I can't just talk about on the way to school, because he probably hears me like that Charlie Brown teacher, like wah, 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 right? So yeah, I get passionate about all these things.
I can tell. I'm like imagining you being like the dad, for example, and like the fun, all the different things that happen in life. And, you know, I also, you know, you said something too, you know, as you were talking, you're like, you know, we've got these codes, you know, meaning like, I think there's this history. And I actually, you know, my grandmother was a Puerto Rican immigrant and my father came from nothing and then worked his way to work Wall Street in New York City. And I think for a lot of us, it's like inherited in our DNA, whether it's of scarcity or whether you come from wealth or whether you come from something in between, that in a lot of times it not only defines us, and I think it's important, you know, as you had talked on your website, you know, as if your great grandfather was your client, like what can you learn about that? But then also like recognizing not only what was true then, but what's true now. And how can you actually break and dissolve, whether it's inherited patterns or whatever it is, to actually give you a new context, a new future to step into that's true from where you are now. And just to relate this to our listeners, you know, I imagine there's a lot of entrepreneurs that tune into the show and a lot of people that are in corporate jobs and other things. But when it comes to money, it's such a charged thing for many people. And it encompasses a lot of what we just talked about. But how do you start to get your clients and even like the philosophy behind Wealth Factory just to view wealth in a different frame? Like, what do you think are some of the first fundamental steps in actually being in this conversation? Because I think it's easy to be like, here's how to make money or here's how to do that. But if you don't have the rooted layers addressed, then all of that just becomes like, you know, icing on top of mud pie, for example, or something like that.
Yeah, the first thing that I make sure to emphasize is that you don't shrink your way to wealth. Because some people get caught in that. And I love to quote Benjamin Franklin, because he said, wealth isn't the man that has it, but the man that lives it. so that wealth is how we live, and that wealth comes in five tracks. Like, being rich is having a lot of money, but being wealthy is having depth and harmony in five key categories. Finance is one of them, because if someone doesn't have money, it's like not a lot of air. It becomes really suffocating, right? Mm-hmm. Unless you're going to have a loincloth and a bow and arrow and live in the woods, then it's super damn useful. The second thing is soul purpose. So soul purpose is our values, our abilities, our passions combined for the highest context of our living. And if we don't have purpose, I don't care if you have the other things, you're probably not going to be very happy. I think it's a very difficult life. The third thing is mentality or mindset, right? This is part of wealth. How we view the world. Do we have a perspective of abundance or scarcity? Do we have a perspective of value creation or selfishness? And so what that perspective determines our action. And then the fourth thing is physical. So that's health, right? Like, someone without their health, well, they have but one dream. It's to get their health back. Someone with their health can have thousands of dreams. It's kind of a proverb that's out there. And then the fifth piece is social. Relaxation, recreation, and rejuvenation. So it's not about perfect balance in these five areas. It's about depth, meaning you're present and you're not looking at what happened in the past or waiting for what's coming in the future. Or it's about harmony, which is just saying I'm intentionally choosing what this looks like. There might be times I'm totally in flow in one of the four, five categories and neglecting the other ones momentarily, but I am intentional about how I'm bringing them back into my life. So you're not feeling guilty if you're like in the middle of an amazing project and excited about it. But when that project gets a certain point, you've reserved times to relax, rejuvenate, and really immerse yourself with your family or whatever it is, you know. And so to me, it's having those five tracks dialed in. And if any one of those are out of whack for too long, it's going to, your whole wealth is going to suffer, your whole existence.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And I'm curious, like, in your own life, like, to say, to even lay out that frame, I imagine you've had some life experience that then informed how you arrived, you know, say at that map. And I'm curious, like, if we were a fly on the wall in the life of Garrett, like, what would have been some of the key moments we would have seen that really, I feel like, have helped define and shape, you know, the perspective that that we're hearing from today?
Yeah, so I at one time in my life was a miser. I was just trying to like cut back all expenses. Even when I first got married, my father-in-law said, well, if you guys want to move in the basement, save money, you can. So I go to my wife, I'm like, hey babe, we should move into your parents' basement. She goes, I guess you don't care about having sex or what? Like, I'm like, oh wait, yeah, maybe I'll budget out a few $100 a month for rent. And then she's like, showed me there's actually a ghetto in Utah. I didn't know that, but my mind was all kind of in this notion of how can I save and how can I cut? And so there's, you know, that was kind of an early thing for me. And then I win this award in the world of finance and I'm in Las Vegas and I run into this woman, Nancy Ogilvy, who was part of the team that worked with Robert Kiyosaki, and I'm young. So I'm like fascinated. I'm talking to her and, you know, and I say something and she's like, I can't wait till you get to the next level, meet other people and see how they view money in the world, because, you know, you're on a great track, but you're also, I'll just cut, it was like limited or something, right? And I was like, really? So I decided to open up and I say, well, can we work through this? Will you coach me right now? And so I just start talking to her about the situation. I remember telling her, yeah, once we're here, then we'll consider kids. And it was all around money, right? The whole conversation, she goes, hey, Garrett, I wonder what it's like living in the financial prison that you've built for your wife. Mm. I was like, oh, I'm the a-hole. Like, I just got so clear that because of scarcity, because of how my family was, you know, raised me with the best of intentions, but with, you know, hard work with the wrong philosophy still equals limitation or bankruptcy or frustration or, you know, a lack of wealth. And so I was kind of in that mindset. But once she said that, I remember calling my wife right then, apologizing about my behavior in this blind spot, starting to cry, by the way, and the whole session lets out and 1,000 people are walking to the conference. I'm thinking, they're looking at me going like, that kid is super proud of his little Rookie of the Year award, isn't he? Right. But I'm just like sitting there. And within like 3 weeks, we buy a house that we love. And within a few months, I've doubled my monthly income because I'm no longer in the hoarding mindset and I'm in the value mindset because of that one simple shift. Right. Yeah. And so I've had multiple times where I've had those shifts because then I got into this, you know, all about making more money, all about working harder. And when people say, oh, what are your hobbies? I'm like, I own a business. They're like, well, what do you live in Utah? Do you ski? I'm like, no, I own a business. What else do you do? Business, right? So I got into that striver mode, which was all about more, bigger, better. And I think that part of that was like filling this void of whatever things I had unresolved as a kid to show and prove that I could be successful, and success meant having more than everyone else I knew. And that's a losing game because A, when you're trying to be perfect, perfectionism is impossible. And B, there is always more. If you're playing the game of more, you're never going to be satisfied because you can't enjoy and celebrate the wins and victories and kind of create the love of the space in between. It's always about some arrival, and you get there and you find out you got to the top of the wrong mountain, or that you, or that you lost really critical things you can never get back, like memories and experiences.
Yeah. So good. If we go zoom in on that shift, for example, is that shift still relevant in terms of what you keep in your arsenal or your toolkit now, or is there a shift that you can share with our listeners right now, just in terms of the mindset, that either it's unlocked something for you, like that time with your wife, or if it's something else, that you feel, might be relevant or might create a shortcut or a new way of thinking.
Look, let me define it. There's two sides of the scarcity coin. One is when people are playing not to lose. They're holding on to what they have. They're stuck in the past, right? They fear change. They don't like technology or advancement because it scares them because it's not what they know and understand. And so there's one of two personalities there. The miser, which I talked about before, which is all about eliminating, cutting back, saving, scrimping. They'll drive 3.5 miles to save 3 cents on gas. They'll wait 7 days for something to go on sale for 3% off. They don't value their time. Then there's the conservative, and this isn't a political ideology. The conservative is all about funding their retirement and saving as much income as they can and delaying gratification always. They have their eye on a big dream, but it's something that they're never going to buy because it's always elusive. Those are the playing not to lose kind of mindsets. Now, there's another more elusive scarcity mindset that's more damaging, even though it creates value in the world, and that's playing to win. A lot of people wear playing to win as a badge of honor, but playing to win is being stuck in the future. It's the striver that's always willing to work harder, do more, outlast, exhaust themselves, neglect their health for too long or whatever it is, and everything else, like they leave a lot of body bags along the way. And then there's also a worse version, which is the high roller. The high roller is always looking to take from people. Look how great I am. And if you just follow me, I've got all the answers for you. Just give me all your money or just do this deal. And so those four personas are losing games. Those are losing constructs. But what's crazy is the same characteristics shifted into the game of value creation actually become extraordinarily valuable. So the miser, if they focus on others and service and solving problems and delivering value, the miser becomes a mindful manager, critical for an organization. They make sure that none of the money is leaking or unused, or find more efficient ways to get the same thing done, or find free programs instead of paying a lot of money for something that isn't even more valuable. Or the conservative becomes the planner. They create performance for an organization. They think about the obstacles or the issues before they arise. They start to really be instrumental in how things get implemented. The striver becomes the creator. The creator can actually innovate, and they can build, and they can grow, and they can delegate, and they can bring other people along because they provide so much opportunity. And the high roller becomes the catalyst, and that catalyst connects people, and they uplift people. They invest in others, and they say, "Hey, how do we get there together?" And so it's just a different perspective, but it's the same characteristics. It's the same strengths, but used not just selfishly, but used in collaboration, cooperation, used in delegation, used in, a real vision that matters.
Yeah. So good. I love all of that. And really almost, taking what's there and then flipping almost the frame, how I relate to it inside of that. And, it kind of brings me up to this point of freedom, right? Because I think that this is something that so many of us, if you ask someone, and you might use a different word for it, you might call it independence, you might call it, whatever it might be, that it's something that many of us strive for in different ways, and particularly economic freedom. And my dad used to always say to me, there's no freedom without economic freedom. And I remember hearing that since I was like 8 years old. And in a lot of ways, he's true, it's very accurate. And I'm curious for you how these concepts, and then particularly how you relate to freedom, how someone can start to define what that means to them. Because I think without having a clear definition of that, it like you said, it is a perpetual trap of either not enoughness or a perpetual trap. You're in the con side of those qualities or the shadow side of those qualities. How do you relate to freedom in this concept of, economic freedom or economic independence?
That may be the best question anyone's ever asked me. So that's truly insightful, because semantics matter, and all wealth is built through conversation. So like you said, if there's no target, if it's ill-defined, then you're never going to get there. So let me make two distinctions. There's financial freedom, which is bastardized and abused in the financial world as to what it is. And there's economic independence. So economic independence is when you have enough recurring revenue to cover life's basic expenses. That recurring revenue typically comes from one of two sources. One is assets that produce cash flow. So it may be, some people might call it passive income, but it's not truly passive, because you still have to monitor it if you want to maintain it, right? You still have to manage it and have responsibility in it. It just might not be a daily management. And so those assets create cash flow, or entrepreneurial income, which is the income that comes in even if you're not opening your computer on your phone or in an office, because you've created some level of scale or leverage or structure that allows other people to be part of that vision. So when that covers your basic expenses, you're economically independent. 95% of people in the United States are not economically independent at age 65. 95%, because they don't even think about creating cash flow. They think about accumulating assets and then hoping one day it's going to be enough, but a lot of times it isn't. The second thing is financial freedom, which is a state of mind. It's a state of being. Economic independence is a state where you have enough to cover the basics. Financial freedom is when money's no longer your primary reason or excuse why you do or don't do something. So it's no longer the primary reason or excuse. It's a consideration, not the consideration. So if I broke that down, there's three measures of worth. The first is price. That's just what we pay. And most of the world gets stuck only looking at price. The second is cost, which takes into effect, like, what's the net impact? What's the economic impact? So something can have a low price but a high cost. Like if I'm trying to fly somewhere and I can get a lower price on the flights, but there's two layovers and I'm in a middle seat of coach, like, yeah, it's low price, high cost. I can't work. I'm exhausted by the time I get there. I'm less productive, right? And then the third piece is value. Value is our personal preference. So it's our fulfillment. It's our joy. It's our perspective. And so people that are financially free, they look at value first, cost second, and price third. People that don't have that freedom look at price and price alone, and every now and again might dip their toe into the, you know, cost. But like, you can have a really good accountant that costs twice as much, but cost you a lot less because they save you 10 times more than the person that just tells you what to pay with no strategy attached to it. So price, cost, and value, financial freedom and economic independence, knowing the differences there, I think is so empowering. And if you create economic independence, you'll be 10 times ahead of everybody else that's trying to save 10% of their income and set it aside. You won't have to set any of your income aside, or you can now invest 100% of your active income if you want to, because you have your basics handled. And if you're married, you're probably married to someone that's not an entrepreneur. You might be not, but probably a different money personality. So there's no more compromise where you're going, well, I guess I can't do this project because it makes them feel scared. As soon as we were economically independent, my wife became my biggest advocate. When I wasn't economically independent, then she's going, well, what if this takes too long? Well, we have to change the schools for the kids, eat different food, live in a different home, you know, lose sleep at night. But that economic independence became a platform where we had exponential growth, and that I could truly be an artist because I don't have to do anything from day to day. I choose to do things from day to day.
Yeah, so, so good. I want to talk about that choice of that every day in just a few moments. But Garrett, let's say someone's hearing this and they're like, all right, I'm tracking. I got it. I don't want to be in the nine. I don't want to be one of those, you know, at 65 in the 95%. And, you know, they really get that value in terms of decision making. But how do you actually advise, you know, someone in really starting to create that economic independence in themselves? Like, if they're looking at this and they're like, the gap between where I am to what you're painting feels so large, that how do I even interact, you know, engage in this conversation? What can you offer there?
All right, we'll break it down really simply.
Awesome. So,
let me give the basics first. You got to automatically save your money a percentage off the top. This is of your personal income. And then you can choose to deliberately invest, but not until you have a peace of mind fund. A peace of mind fund is you've got 6 months of personal expenses set aside and that you can handle. Now, I'm going to help you get there really fast, because there's four main I's to efficiency. The first I, and I'm using I, although it's really tax, but it's the IRS if we're talking the US. So 98% of entrepreneurs are overpaying on their taxes right now. Simply, when you have a right framework, then you'll know how to save that tax, and that adds to your bottom line. And by the way, if you've overpaid in the last 3 years, you can go back and amend your returns. get that money back, and that can help you build that 6 months of savings. The second I is interest. If people have more than one loan, 4 out of 5 times they're paying more than they need to. So you either restructure the loans, you either reallocate by taking underperforming assets that aren't earning high interest and pay off higher interest rate loans, which is a guaranteed return and improves cash flow, or you renegotiate those interest rates because all loans are negotiable. And so you now are finding money that was going to financial institutions that now end up in your pocket. The third eye is investments. A lot of people have non-performing fees with their investments. They haven't protected the downside of their investments by adding, you know, downside protection like collateral or trailing stop losses, which would automatically move you to cash if there was too big of an economic downfall, you know, or even getting some risk-free capital that isn't subject to what's happening in the stock market, because there's a lot of people don't know what they're doing there. They're just handing it over and hope it works out. And the fourth eye is insurance. There's a lot of duplicate coverages, improper structure. Only insure catastrophic things, never inconsequential things, and you're going to save a lot of money, and then you can handle the things that you could write a check for tomorrow and still go to sleep tonight with. Well, then you're going to be fine not insuring those. But there's a lot of people that just have the wrong structure there. So by simply being more efficient, 10% or more of your income is slipping through the cracks, you know, going right through your fingers. So by paying yourself first automatically, by finding the money to get that money in there and then continually paying yourself first, then once you've got 6 months, you can choose to deliberately invest. But for a lot of entrepreneurs, it's investing in infrastructure in their business, either the right people, the right processes that allow those people to perform, the right procedures, that's technology that allows them to scale or leverage so that it isn't just about them, so they can do what they do best. That's another piece. But ultimately, economic independence comes down to 5 main things. The first one is to plug the leaks with those 4 eyes to efficiency. The second is to engineer wealth, which means find out what your monthly number is, and let's reverse engineer and say, what would you have to do to create that income? Is it entrepreneurial income in your business? Is it paying off loans? Is it building a better foundation so you have more stability? Is it investing in things you know and understand, which I call your investor DNA, that create cash flow rather than accumulate? Then the third category is to accelerate investment income, which is instead of accumulating, you turn on the cash flow of existing investments so that helps you achieve economic independence. Then the fourth one is scaling business revenue. This is so neglected in financial books today, but 92% of people worth $5 million or more own a business. So why not scale that business properly? And I'm not talking about scale of going corporate and losing the identity of your business because it's all about the numbers. I'm talking about you let go of certain things right now that are not representative of who you want to be as an artist, and you embrace the things that only you could do that you're willing to do. So for me, that's speaking, that's writing, that's filming videos, it's building high-level relationships, and it's working on the articulation of the vision of what we're up to and conveying that to my team. Anything outside of those 5 things are not bringing me scale because it's actually weighing down my bandwidth, my energy, and destroying my soul. So I want to do those 5 things, right? So if you scale your business revenue, you'll have exponential growth. And then the fifth thing is make it count. This is what you do. You help people make it count. Make it count is you build a life you don't want to retire from. You enjoy life along the way so you're relaxed and rejuvenated so you can be the best creator that you want to be. And you're going, hey, I have energy. Hey, I'm doing the things I want. And if you, those are the 5 things that if you nail that and dial that in, you'll become economically independent in 3 to 7 years. Most people, they cut to the wrong chase and they go, where should I invest my money? But they don't, that's the wrong question. It's how do you become a better investor? What things do you already have that can improve your cash flow? Where can you scale your business? And then look to take that business wealth to personal wealth. And the best news is 80% of what you think you need to invest in financially and learn about and worry about doesn't apply to you. You don't have to worry about it. Let's simplify to the things that really matter most. Eliminate everything from options trading or real estate or tax liens or stock markets, you know, if that's not who you are. I don't invest in those things. I invest in my 3 businesses. I invest in a highly safe cash value life insurance that has very low commission that allows me to have that cash. And then when recessions come, I buy businesses that complement my existing business. And by doing that, I've had exponentially more growth than when I had 100 real estate properties, a hard money lending fund, 2 oil and gas deals, 2 IPOs, and blah, 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 that destroyed the enjoyment of my life.
Yeah, so good. I love the simpler version. Make it count, everyone. Unconventional lifers, make it count. And, you know, Garrett, just to kind of zoom out a little bit from this conversation, you know, you talked about being the artist. And I imagine for you to embrace, like, hey, these are the 5 things that it is like my highest leverage. Like, this is how I make it count as I focus on these 5 things. That it really took something in yourself. And we talked about this a little bit briefly, but of actually embracing the fact that you are an artist, you know, beyond just a creator and an entrepreneur and someone who can, you know, do all these different things. And so what is your perspective of being the artist? What did it take for you to step into shift into that role and being the artist? And then what has that ultimately unlocked and made available? I imagine one domino has kind of created other ripples in some of these other areas. What has that made available in your life?
So what it made available is that I love what I do and I want to do it. Like I, you know, took a 2-month trip to Italy with my family and I was excited to come back doing what I was doing. I didn't feel like I had to get away from something. I just felt like I wanted to create a special experience now because I'm not ever going to retire. What it allowed me to do and what really brought it about was delegating roles, R-O-L-E, delegating a role to someone so they could own it like it was their business. So I don't have to micromanage. I just have good people and they go, yep, I'm in charge of that. So what does that allow me to do? It allows me to think like I'm writing this thing called the Win Then Play playbook right now. I have a meeting about it later today. I don't know how many, you know, tens of hours I have in it in just the last little while, but I'm loving it. I'm like, this is like, I'm so proud of it because I'm like, this is incredible life-changing stuff that before I wouldn't have done if I was caught up in email. Or I created this thing called the Wealth Book, which is, it's got a 9-inch screen and 9 buttons and it's got an origin story and it's got 3 buttons on one's on cash flow, one's on tax, one's on investing. Then it's got these really cool case studies that we did. And then it's got this magazine inside of it that's got beautiful design to it with amazing writing that took me 18 months. But it's like, that is something I'm so proud to show because it's like a piece of art. And that is my art because the world of finance has been dry, drab, boring, monotone, complicated, tons of jargon, and needs energy. And so when I decided it was okay to be an artist, I started doing stand-up comedy. That is thrilling and fun. And I do stand-up comedy sometimes the night before I do a keynote the next day. And, you know, and it's like, it's just, it's helping me reinvent and come from creation rather than reaction. And be able to like say, I'm inventing this because it's what I want to invent, not because it's what's been done before, but it speaks to my soul. So I feel alive. I feel like I can accomplish more in less time. I mean, I wrote one book in 10 years when it was only about business. Now I've got 7 books right now. Two of them, one of them comes out right away called Budgeting Sucks. But this other one, Win Then Play, I want it to be the number one financial book in history as far as advancing and supporting the human race. And I'm going to put 25 years into it within doing a one-man show because that's art, not just getting up there and going over concepts. So anyway, like I know I'm kind of rambling now, but it's like it's creation versus like details. Like details yeah. destroy an artist sometimes, but I can delegate the details and I can stay in the creation mode.
Absolutely. And I imagine you're probably having a lot more fun while you're doing it. Like if I think about like doing stand-up comedy the night before, like for me as a musician, it's like if I get up and like do an improv performance and I like one of my gifts is I can make up full songs or channel full songs in the moment. And so it's like if I do that, it literally gets the juice going such that it then gets dispersed into all these other different areas. And I feel like we're coming into an era, particularly, you know, the last couple of years and even coming into 2020, where, you know, actually reclaiming the artist and actually having structures for accountability for that to live and thrive and like, you know, keep expanding actually do fuel the entrepreneurship, not only fuel it, like the merging of the two in terms of the self-expression are becoming more of a requirement. And I'm just curious if you have any advice for people that have parts of themselves, maybe that they've compartmentalized historically, whether it's their art or their components of their self-expression, how you found bringing those pieces back in has really kind of given you the all, the and reality, if you will.
If it serves you in the moment, there doesn't have to be an overall like where it's headed exactly. Like when I started stand-up comedy, I wasn't like, oh, I'll do a one-man show and I'll, you know, I was just like, look, I think it's really healthy to challenge myself and it's exciting. I don't have to have any drug and I feel like I just took the coolest drugs in the world when I come off stage. So like, and now it's being integrated. I'm integrating it into my speaking. I'm, you know, integrating it a little bit in some of the videos we filmed yesterday for YouTube. And then I'm heavily integrating it into the one-man show. So to me, art is the best relaxation for a lot of people, right? And so just being rejuvenated from it. But then it may turn into something. It's fine because sometimes art is just for the artist. It doesn't have to be for the world. But as you fed the inner artist, you'll be able to amplify everything else that you do to a higher degree.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know your YouTube channel, you mentioned that briefly. I know you set a goal for yourself this year, which you've actually doubled. Will you just share a little bit about that, just in terms of, I imagine you being fed from the inner artist and now watching that externalize?
Well, in April of 2019, I had like 85 subscribers. I didn't even know I had a channel. So I guess 85 was better than I even knew. But I was like, yeah, I should do some. I've not done anything with social media. I've just felt like it interrupts life because it's more like, oh, here's what I'm eating or here's this trip I'm going on. And I feel like the things I do could be easily perceived as douchey, you know, being a whiskey som or smoking a tobacco pipe or something. So I was like, it didn't resonate. But then I was like, wait, this is a platform to get a message out. And it's a way for me to be an artist in the way that I want to. So I started creating videos and now we're at 5 a week, on YouTube. And we're at like about, at the time that we're recording this, 18,000 subscribers. My goal was 10,000 by the end of 2019. And so I just want to get to 20,000 and then take that to 100,000 and on to 1 million and above, because I'd like it to be the most viewed financial channel, because I think I can simplify finance, bring entertainment to finance. And I have a thing called AskTheMoneyNerds.com where I'm interacting with my viewers. They can go ask questions and I'll film videos to those questions once a week. And we'll actually send them the video directly, but we'll also post it on YouTube because I get more comments in one day on YouTube than I've gotten on all my social media over a decade. So it's really working for me to engage with people. And by the way, I respond to all of them, even if they tell me I'm a jackass or someone should go out there, I'll just respond, yeah, someone should kick this guy's ass. Like I don't really care, because it's like, I'm not there to, you know, like I'm not there to prove someone wrong. I'm there to be of value. And a lot of times when people get harsh with me, I respond with kindness, and then I actually influence them a little bit in a positive way. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, so good. For our listeners, Garrett, who want to check out those videos and even help get you over to that 20,000, what's the place to go check that out? Where's the channel located? We'll throw that link in the show notes.
Yeah, if you're like in an internet browser, you can go to garrett.live and it'll forward you on to YouTube. If you're in YouTube, you can just type in Garrett Gunderson and then hit subscribe. But yeah, garrett.live in an internet browser will take you right there.
Awesome. Unconventional Lifers. We'll put that at unconventionallifeshow.com. Garrett, I feel like you and I could jam forever, but for our sake for now, let's jump into the rapid fire round. And listeners, if you've been enjoying this conversation, we've got a really awesome giveaway that we're going to share for you just after the rapid fire round. So stay tuned. Garrett, I've got a series of lightning questions coming at you. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right. Question numero uno, fill in the blank. If you really knew me, you would know what?
I'm a premier romantic.
Love that. Next question. What is one obstacle that you felt paralyzed by in your life that, looking back on it now, it almost makes you laugh? Like, no big deal.
Oh my God. I felt paralyzed 7 years into my marriage when my wife and I were in a mediocre place. That was just the most painful, brutal experience. And now we have like an epic love affair. So it just seems crazy that we were there.
Yeah. Next question. What is one quirky fact most people may be surprised to know about you?
Well, I love to roast people. I love to like do full on roasts. I've done it for, like, I had a buddy who's having a birthday and his girlfriend emailed me and said, would you like to tell some jokes? I read that as, would you like to roast the hell out of Mike? And so I roasted him. And then afterwards, I was like, thank you so much for asking me to roast Mike. She goes, I didn't ask you to roast him. I'm like, I would bet my left arm you asked me. And I pulled up the email and it just said, tell some jokes. But I've roasted a lot of people over the years and it's so much fun. I'm actually building a thing called Dark Roast, which is a cart that I can make coffee on that's going to be pulled behind my e-bike. And I could just ride around and then people can order coffee. I'll make it for them while I roast the hell out of them. So roasting while roasting.
So good. I would sign up for that. I love being roasted. I feel it takes someone really extraordinary for me to really feel that. So maybe
I won the, did you know Yannick Silver with Maverick?
Yeah.
You know him?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So when he had his 10-year anniversary of Maverick, I flew in and won the Great Green Gong Show by impromptu roasting him. And it was just a blast. And he was standing behind me the whole time I was roasting him because he's emceeing the whole thing. He didn't know I was going to do it. And so, yeah, I got a 30 out of 30 score from the judges. So it's a nice little award I keep on the shelf. That's probably my favorite award I've ever gotten.
So good. I love that. Well, upcoming attractions. Next question for you. What are some practices that you do regularly that you feel set you up for success?
My morning ritual, little 5-minute journal to start the day, a workout, make a cappuccino. And if I'm having a good morning, I'll do Breathe Plus app, or I'll do New Calm, and I'll do this check-in where I just go through my life and I just go through a gratitude and love for what I have, including my toes and my fingers and my ears. I'm a small town boy. I love the truck that I drive. I love the cabin that I have. I love the friends that I have. I love the crit. So I like just putting myself in this love thing, because I did 40 years of Zen in February, and I watch what happened when our brain is in love to our overall brain waves. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to be in that love mode more often.
Yeah. So good. Last question for you. What does living the unconventional life mean to you?
I think it best is summed up when my wife was on a video for my origin story, and she said, you know what, when Garrett was graduating college, he said, there's no job out there for me, so I'm just going to create my own. And my 9-year-old at the time, he's 12 now, he goes, what do you mean dad created his own job after his film? She goes, well, he's an entrepreneur. And I'd probably go with the word artist now, more than entrepreneur, which is an entrepreneur, and that's what they do. He goes like, oh, I want to be an entrepreneur. So I think that, you know, like, I just go with whatever dream or notion that I have, and I don't look whether it existed before or how someone else did it. I'm just like, no, I want that. And I'm insane enough to believe that I can have it, like, you know, and that I'm willing to go for it.
Yeah, so good. I love that. Garrett Gunderson, everyone. Garrett, tell us about the giveaway that you've got for listeners.
Yeah, this is a pretty amazing giveaway, if I do say so myself. It's wealthfactory.com/megakit. And so we have a cash recovery toolkit in there. So it's just where you know, basics on finding lost money, like anything from purchases or mistakes on bills, like medical bills or wireless. And then there's more powerful, there's a financial strength checklist. So understanding your financial strength and where you might, you know, be exposed. And then there's a cash flow investors toolkit, which is how to become a cash flow investor, which is really critical because people struggle with that. Then my Killing Sacred Cows, New York Times bestseller book, my What Would the Rockefellers Do book. And, you know, yeah, that's a pretty good little kit that people can have.
Yeah, I have some called a mega kit. I think it's pretty epic. Unconventional lifers, you can head over to unconventionallifeshow.com. We'll put that link there, wealthfactory.com/megakit. Garrett, for those that want to follow along on the journey, I know we've already given the link for checking out the videos, but what's the best way to stay in touch and you know, stay connected through your journey?
I literally respond to every comment on YouTube.
Awesome.
So if they want to, you know, comment on a YouTube video and tell me they heard me here, I will respond and stay connected and engaged that way. So I could give a lot of other ways, but I check that more than I check email, which is very infrequently. And I'm unlikely to post or write back on Instagram ever. So I definitely feel like YouTube, strangely.
Awesome. Garrett Gunderson on YouTube. We'll throw that link as well. Garrett, I had a blast. This was a lot of fun. I feel like there's like so many more threads we could go down, but thank you so much for taking the time to chat with our Unconventional Life family. It was great having you on the show.
I really enjoyed doing the show. I really enjoyed the pre-show, hearing a little bit about your adventures and travels and what you're up to and what you guys are doing in Unconventional Life, which is really phenomenal.
Yeah, awesome. Unconventional Lifers will have more amazing content coming at you guys as well. Head over to unconventionallifeshow.com to get all the updates. Garrett, thanks again, everyone. We'll see you all soon.